You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore, on Radio Tacoma 101.9 FM. This year we're having another miscellany of seasonal poems from many of the poets that we've introduced over the last 2 years.
My name is Joy Layden, and this poem is called Christmas Eve. To God, who is always being born, every birth is the birth of God. Everyone who says, "Here I am," is God's umbilical cord. Every word of love is a nipple nursing God. God is our child, and our children are God. Easy to hold, easy to drop, easy to trim with lights that aren't the light of God. When we were born, God was born. When we were touched without love, God learned to touch without love. When we learn to forgive, the plague will stop. God moves between the quick and the dead, swinging a censer, growing younger, curling into the womb-like space, created to hold our unborn God just below our hearts.
The friendly voice of Alan Wolowitz of Long Island, New Yorker, good friend of Sound Poetry.
Christmas at the yoga retreat. No holly, no lights, only the tree outside, lonely, unadorned, but come to full term with the help of some higher power, which saved it from man's need to turn trees into monuments to whomever he turns when life is at low ebb. For a moment now, it's decorated with a winter bird or two and some orphan snow in the crotch of a branch. But we're just a few days the other side of the solstice, and the mothership, this creaky scow of ours, seems to be stuck on a sandbar as it tries to right itself and chug a new path through the multiverse. Now we can't see much through the growing dark, though those who study the calendar assure us there's some hope ahead. And it just so happens, should we chuck it all for the sake of meditation becomes the very subject of tonight's meditation. Our leader tells us this is the last full moon there be on Christmas, and then looking around at our mostly aging crew formed in an expectant circle blurts this accidental truth. In some of our lifetimes, the way our days insist on crashing so predictably to their end seldom gets spoken in Canyon Ranch or Parrot K, those tonier joints where more room will soon be needed for advanced yoga poses by the young and lithe Brahmin, and where we tell ourselves we have no intention of spending the last few shekels of our bounty, much less the frankincense and myrrh left from our previous incarnations, we keep stashed against bad tidings in our underwear drawer.
Publisher Kuhn Woon of West Seattle.
The Mirage of Christmas. Taking is one half of Christmas. Giving is the other half. The government gives you with the left and takes from you with the right. Taxes, refunds, credits and debits, debts and overpayments. I've known them all. Santa rides in a sleigh straight from the North Pole, as in Marco Polo from Cathay. But today, unfortunately, the Narc sits stationed at the border. And where you see the mirage of the three wise men, you're parched for water. The mirage of Christmas is like this. No free lunches, and you pay with your life for some unattainable high. Santa, the enabler, is behind this. Dream ye of a white Christmas, just like the one you used to know.
farmer and poet Jessica Gigo of Bow, Washington.
Christmas Mission Road. In the photo, Nana is holding me, baby green corduroy pants, gold ornaments twinkling behind us. I smell fir and cinnamon sticks, see the shine of new spode, feel the soft fuzz of felt stockings. Before his fingers twisted to gnarls, Baba would play jazzy carols on the upright piano. I hear those notes. I taste tiny ham sandwiches, dishes of nuts and fish crackers, shrimp cocktail and turtle bars. Gathering garners the senses, leaves an imprint on the tongue, the ear, the eye. In one breath, I am transported back to December in Alloway, their Midwestern neighborhood, adorned with wreaths and lights, 2,000 miles from here and decades away. I am a baby, a toddler, a teenager. The past is a glimmer, and the dead are alive and well.
I'm Colleen Shoshana McKee, and this is called German Pancakes. It's a true story from my friend Jada Salvo, RIP. That Hanukkah, you became quite intrigued when I told you about German latkes. I didn't have a recipe. I just told you that you mashed potatoes and then fried them up. You became obsessed with making them correctly. Why? I don't know. Maybe it was one food you'd never seen before, one exotic Jewish food. You had to master it. Plus, you wanted to do something special for Gia and me. You were sorry for quitting our band when you were drunk. I'm so sorry about that, too. I never saw you consult a cookbook, though you cooked here all the time. You cooked with this precise, efficient nonchalance like you could do it in your sleep. In fact, you could cook more easily than you could sleep. When I thanked you for cooking, you'd just say, it's what I do. You peeled and sliced and grated and boiled, and I don't know what all you did to those potatoes. Gia and I watched the candles melt for what seemed like hours as you did everything to a potato that could be done to a potato, and grease coated the walls, and we had these potato puffs with little peaks like meringue, and we ate and we sang and we ate and we ate, and you broke the kitchen table, but that was okay. That was the Hanukkah you just quit heroin and drinking. You were chock full of Hanukkah cheer. You are the only person who has ever brought me 8 presents for Hanukkah, and all of them were practical, with the exception of a Hello Kitty card, which was supposed to be a Chinese New Year card that people put money in. But of course there was no money inside because you were always broke. The card had a lot of red and pink glitter, though. You know how much I like glitter. Most of the gifts were things you were sick of me not having in my kitchen. That Hanukkah, you brought a grater, a step stool, house slippers, a knife, the green and glass teapot that I burnt while you were alive and broke after you died. How I cried when I broke it, like a fool. Well, I couldn't break the tea, the green dragon tea. Also, the little cake of rose tea in a wrapper so elegant I couldn't bring myself to open it. You flat out told me, "It's very expensive." It was actually from Rhea, your roommate. She didn't come to the dinner, but sent along the rose cake tea to make it 8 gifts. She was grateful to me for helping you, but you helped me too. You listened and opened jars and schlepped things up and down the stairs when I broke my foot. It wasn't hard being handicapped around you because, as you said, I'm used to everything being broken.
This is David Gilmore, the host of Sound Poetry. Lean, mean Santa. Short days, early dark, but no snow. You get the picture. A spark I had to find to get on the go. "Take my red suit," said Joe. "I'm no go. Head down to the mall there. They'll show you the ropes. Give you a beard. But I ain't that fat to fit your garb. Unless I pack it with pillows to grow big. The beard will do the trick, you reckon?" "Look, Matt," said Joe, "go. You'll do. And do yourself and me a great favor. The kids have driven me mad. Worse, every year. And you're a natural nut. So get out of the ward. Head for a thrill. Say what you want, Matt. Do what you will. Sat me in a plush red chair, they did. And in 5 minutes, up came a kid. Posh little boy with spiky hair. He sat on my lap. I didn't care. Who are you? And what do you want? I'm William, Santa. I want a robot. A real one, you say. Have you a dad? Yeah, but he's not here. He's home. He was mad. Is he one of those get-up-early type, puts on a suit, grabs a coffee, straightens his tie, then dashes out to catch the train after he kisses Mom and says bye-bye? Is he a John, a Ted, or a Harry? No, said Will. His name is Jim. Well, that's just Jim Dandy. Perhaps he comes home at 5 and he gets a drink, then sinks in a chair to peruse the day's breaking news on the TV. Well, how do you know my dad so well? Well, then you have dinner, and after you're worn out, they might pack you off to bed. Every day more or less the same for him? So there, you have a robot, William. That's him, Jim. Here comes a little beautiful child, smart as you please, and gets a quick start. I'm Riley MacDonald, and I want a Barbie, one that's got a collection of clothes. Riley, do you have a mom? Over there, is that your mother, the one with fair hair? Yes, that's her, and she's in a rush, so please, Riley pleaded. Barbie, that's my best wish. Well, Riley, does your mum have a thin waist? Can she cinch a belt 2 notches tighter? Does she have some high heels, red, perhaps? Yes, said Riley. She's slim as a bean and has lots of shoes with super high heels, even red. See, Riley dear, you already have a Barbie. So there's got to be something new this year. What? A unicorn, a handbag, a scooter and skates? Well, I could try for a backpack and a package of books, a tent with metal stakes and a camping stove. Oh, Santa, please, you have no idea what you say. Then I see this rascal jumping up the steps, 2 at a time, and kicks the poinsettia plant. And you are you, Jumping Jack Flash. I'm Forrester. My family's right over there. I want a monkey, one that speaks English. Well, who is that little boy yonder climbing up your mother's leg, hanging on her skirt? Oh, that's just my brother Vance. He can also dance when he wants. My dad plays disco. So, Forrester, search no longer. Just have fun. You have a fine little monkey living at home. Play on a jungle gym. Go, give Vance a chance. So my day passed. After lunch, they begged me to leave. Gave me a check. They seemed peeved. Dark, early, shorter days. Still, no snow.
I'm Steve Niebel, reading from my chapbook, Remembering the 21st Century, poems by Steve Niebel. This poem is named First COVID-19 Christmas. It was coming up on the first COVID-19 Christmas. There were people dying everywhere while the fiddles played, people danced in the malls, lined up to go to the stores, while the virus, like a poisonous reptile hiding in the grass, danced through the air, playing its own tune. We tried to stay put, listen to the virus hum a rattlesnake melody. The unemployed were huddled in their tents, landlords brought to their knees, while the kings of commerce laughed in their mansions, bought as much as they could as their wealth grew larger. There are many cliches about the comforts of home. At some point, home starts to feel like one of those rooms in movies where the walls close in on you. You want to scream. During COVID-19, there is no one to hear your screams. The ambulances roar through the streets singing their siren song while the police hide with their donuts, the politicians scheme. We watch Christmas movies where the good guys always win. Disasters only happen to bad guys. We bake more cookies, listen to the seasonal music until we can't stand it anymore. We hope that the trucks full of corpses are not holding a spot for us.
Vashon Island poet Katie E. Ellis.
Soon. His mother has been steadfastly dying on and off for the past year. We've come from hours at her bedside, counting breaths. The seasons are not keeping their promises like they used to. Snow against all predictions of snow, outlast supermarket tulips. Sunshine shocks needles to ground in 100 weekly bucketfuls. Rain enough to drag bluffs into brim-blasted seas. Another freeze on the heels of a trick thaw. Tonight, again, we left her before she left us, but we know it will be soon. What will we think of now when the jolly season comes round again? He'll think of his mother. I'll think of him thinking of his mother. Snow and ice, violent weather on this, oh, holy night. And just before we snuggle under blankets, strings of colored lights doubled in the double window panes, he checks his phone for weather and tells me it should turn to rain in 71 minutes.
My name is Leslie Newman, and this poem, The Hanukkah Game, is from my book, Lovely. The Hanukkah Game. Our mother fries golden latkes, our father spins wooden dreidels, our grandmother gives out bittersweet gelt, and my brother and I sit still for once to play the Hanukkah game. Perched on sticky vinyl chairs at the rickety kitchen table, elbows on placemats, chins resting on fists, my brother picks the tall white shamash, I choose the blue candle on the end. We fix our eyes on the dull brass menorah. Whose flame will last the longest? 50 years flicker by. My Persian cat turns 20. My brother's son becomes a man. Our mother and grandmother play mahjong in heaven. Our father grows old as time and older still. And Hanukkah comes round again. My brother and I live in different states. We light the menorah in separate houses. We sing the blessing over the phone. We hold the line as the candles burn down. Whose flames will last the longest? God only knows.
Hi, it's Michael Shine. This poem's called Lesson. It's a kind of a pagan seasonal poem. Air sharpens, mist tops trees. Now comes darkness. Leaves, like orange-robed Buddhists, self-combust, pressing the wild through cracks in our proud, brittle cities. Come, solstice, our feverish, sun-drunk scalps crave cool night. Come, darkness, teach our unbalanced spirits a lesson of light.
This is Michael Daly. I'm going to read my poem, First Snow on South Fidalgo. Across the bay, lit as if in a summer glow, its tree line in wild green and mud, the island sparks, although on our own bluffs We're enfolded in a world of dark winter, except one azure dapple shoots through an enormous cloud. Then the only aspen close to home, its peels from a dull gray transform under a sudden openness, plates of cloud shifting apart. Its bark and every branch brighten, east edges of limbs and cones lit, the curves of twigs, frosted slope of roofs, tipped in sunlight just before white buttons of hail, translucent morning chips of the sun, begin to tap every window, branch, every grass blade. The island no longer there across the bay, a veil frozen in iron. Comes then the snow. Steadily swept clusters dust the broken light against the brief vanish of the day. That was First Snow on South Fidalgo from my book Reinhabited, New and Selected Poems. This is Michael Daly.
Hi, it's Michael Shine with a poem called New Year's Day. And so another year has passed. Toot horns and raise toasts to the siren song of ghosts. Resolve on ashes of pledges past to bloom like paperwhites forced against the chill on every rain-streaked windowsill. Resolve to love your children well, don't lash them to your failures. Forget old quarrels, kiss your lover, embrace bedazzled strangers. When this new year is old, if we are spared for one more spin around the sun, let's gather again for the ancient ritual of family and friends, rubbing one another raw as penitents, then holy, like stones tumbling in icy surf, polished by faith in our better selves.
Bill Fay of Fox Island, Washington, with some Christmas haiku.
Holiday haiku. Celebration. In the church, the choir finds its chord. Christmas carols, sung by a college of cardinals. Faded potholder. Grandma remembers. Grandma. Call to the table. My family's Macy's Day Parade. Family feast. A shower of words settle on the salad. Grandpa sleeps. The hiss of snowflakes on embers. Christmas card. Grandma hums hymns in the firelight. Celebration. A nightingale serenades the North Star. Happy Holidays from Bill Fay.
Seattle Cosmopolite, Paul E. Nelson.
Sonetos de Cascadia, December 9, 2019. Epigraphs from Wanda Coleman. From Breath to Death, It's All Skin Trouble and Misreadings. And Ted Berrigan. As I was saying, winter of 18 lumps, solstice sonnet. Saturday solstice, we watch the sun stop, rolls reverse, and Saturnalia starts with soup and reascent. The earth's spine, at least seen from this angle of sun, takes chi from a breath deep enough to last half a year and half a year to exhale. Meantime, the intide and out. Meantime, seals hunt halfway up the Duwamish, and Peter sees it from the angle of the fish harvest. outbreaths halfway up Mercer Island, middle of osprey season, and always a summer fish celebrating solstice till talon grip. In breath, attempts to penetrate past skin, quite inside the cave, all the way to the inner room of intricate spirals, or so said Celts, and what did they know? In breath, inside all the way to coot season. Crows farm parking strips for seasonal grubs just as sun comes back, and we must assume summer's over. We must assume another season here fast as candle flash, and remember to feast on myth, remember sun, as in the rune Sowilo, seeks the father's transformation, sends sunlight to penetrate as far inside the cave as possible, and each year winter solstice is the best crack at it.
Happy holidays. This is Seattle poet Rick Clark reading three Christmas haiku. The first one, swept away by the nutcracker sweet, a child again. The second, white elephants, everyone all at once explaining the rules. And the third, ground sparrow scratching forest floor, Christmas Day.
This is Ann Spires. It's a joy in our family to put up the Christmas tree, but there's also satisfaction in taking it down. Traditionally, we take it down on the Feast of the Epiphany, January 6th. Here's the poem. O Christmas tree, on the Feast of the Epiphany, our Christmas tree stands upright, discarded, unsightly in the yard. The tree retains cookies for the rats, for the insects, satsumas unpeel, and fuzzy gray fills the uncurling rind. For the damn squirrels, cranberries and popcorn soften on a gay wire. Winter birds come. Juncos peck the ground. Chickadees ride the branches. Anna's hummingbirds, in the new winter warming, fly to the red boughs and retreat, finding no nectar. Turtle doves stay mute, being styrofoam and false feather. The crows don't bother because the wide world holds so much. In the scrabble of family feuds, raccoons with their taste for anything strip the tree of stale candy canes. We witness hard winter's final dismantling of what is left over. The season's glory fades as the magi depart, and at dawn, the angels on high, quiet with a last alleluia.
The wry voice of Thomas Thomas, Christmas in 1971.
Here's a poem called Christmas Present 1971. I have heard it said that Santa Claus died in an air conditioning duct just south of Lompoc, California. They tell me that temporary ceasefires are at present being negotiated in Cambodia and in Pakistan, in Egypt and in Ireland, in Uganda and in Chicago for Christmas. But it's not likely. Ho, ho, ho. They tell me also that the people in the slums will have at least one solid meal this year, or that the children will have toys or third-hand clothes. And I have it from reliable sources that this year's trees of aluminum and plastic are more natural than ever and even smell like pine. Somewhere I have heard that for once we should try to love one another, and that GE light sets for outdoors are only $1.67. They tell me to forget that next week they all go back to the tall and windowed crypts to shuffle papers in their sleep, and many will starve to death on Christmas Eve, and many die from bullets. You ask me if it isn't worth it to be human for a while. I think yes. But I am tired of this year's lower-than-ever specials and of great new gift ideas and of ideal Xmas gifts for anyone and everyone. Tired of 497 limited-time-only record album sets that capture all the joys of Christmas. And of watching men carve the flesh from each other, strangers cheating strangers. And most of all, I am tired of wars where nobody is wrong, and I am waiting for the everlasting light to shine and for the peacemakers to be called the children of God or of Buddha or of the sun.
From Orcas Island, Jill McCabe Johnston.
Vesica Pichis. My mother's mother deconstructed brooches and bracelets, gifts from her late husband, and cut velvet scraps into pointed ovals called mandalas, like the aureola of light surrounding the Virgin Mary over grandmother's chair. She layered pearls, seed beads, and shiny sequins onto straight pins, a drop of glue at the tip before pressing into the fabric now covering 3-inch styrofoam balls. Rows of crackle glass, bugle beads, and faceted crystals trailed down to a pendant she'd snipped from a favorite necklace. My grandmother draped dozens of the gem-encrusted ornaments from satin ribbons in our dining room windows, where December's fleeting light cast prisms from her past.
This is the voice of Martha Solano.
What I hate most about the holiday season, about scotch tape, about humans, is the flimsy cardboard dispenser thingy that falls off before I've had a chance to wrap a pair of neon socks the recipient might not even want. The tape roll, who decided it should come in a roll, escaping its dispenser, rolling under the bed? What I hate is how instruments are right this moment detecting a planet where lightning strikes a trillion times an hour, while my tape dispenser's just out of reach, forcing me to fetch a yardstick, smack it into grabbing distance. And once I reach it, resume my attempt to wrap my gift, the little hinge has vanished, so I'm using my fingernails to search for where the beginning might be, for an unsmooth spot to pick at. It's like being let loose in a cave without a flashlight, opening your eyes to total darkness. Meanwhile, in Hangzhou, China, a 3D printer is cranking out pairs of human ears. Meanwhile, in a Cornell University lab, scientists have printed out a 10-centimeter square patch of skin, grafted it onto a pig. There is talk of printers kicking out human hearts. There's a video of a live fetus emerging from an HP office jet, and yet this package will not be taped, and I will miss the deadline for priority mailing. And yet we have evidence of microbial life on Mars. Know the age of every Martian rock.
This is Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore. Steve and I wish you all happy holidays, and hope that you'll continue to listen to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma.